Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Bacon Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be hearing about some very interesting new programs in art and education. I'm very happy now to welcome actors Jonathan Richards and Allie McGraw. They will be reading, along with a number of other people, this coming Saturday, December 19th at 4 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore. It's a holiday reading. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for inviting us.
Nice
fun.
To be here.
So holiday reading, all sorts of, what, Christmas stories pretty much?
Pretty much Christmas stories, yes, and a lot of them literate. I mean, we're doing authors like O. Henry and Damon Runyon and Dylan Thomas, so there will be a certain, seasonal as well as literary component to the afternoon.
Classics, really. Things that many of us have heard of forever and maybe not read for years and years.
So did you make the selection, Jonathan?
I did the selections, yes. But I came up with a bunch of things and then sort of winnowed them down. And my goal was to find things that were all 15 minutes or so, less than 20 minutes. That was the ideal, so that we don't wear anybody out.
And reading, being read to as we keep rediscovering, is so much fun, adult or child.
That's right.
So these are reading fit for the whole family.
I would say they're fit for the whole family. There is one, I think we're going to include one selection from David Sedaris as a more contemporary Christmas writer, and he can be somewhat less reverent, perhaps, than some of the others. But I don't think there are any words that you wouldn't want your five-year-old to hear.
David Sedaris, who, among other things, can sing paper towel commercials in the style of Billie Holiday.
Don't. That's great.
Anyway, so I thought maybe we could read one of the selections or some Christmas selection.
Well, we're going to open with something that everybody knows, but hardly anybody has ever actually seen, and that is the editorial from the New York Sun that gives rise to the phrase, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus."
Just like Santa Claus himself, whom everybody knows and nobody has actually seen.
Just the very same thing. So we're going to start off, and Allie will read us the letter that the little girl sent in, and then I will read the editorial.
Excellent.
Perfect. In 1897, a little girl wrote to the New York Sun, "Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon."
"Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole truth, the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they're not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world, which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood.
And that is an editorial from the New York Sun, or a letter from the editor of the New York Sun from 1897. That must have been fun for that fellow to write.
I guess it must have been. I guess everybody wants a chance to really lay out the case for Santa Claus to his kids. And when you can lay it out to all the kids, well, there you're so much better.
Well, and to make the case in a newspaper, which doesn't necessarily traffic in beauty, joy, and the higher things.
Especially now.
Well, speaking of now and the higher things and the not-so-wonderful things that are happening in Santa Fe, this is also a season where we not only gather with our friends and family and read stories and do wonderful things, but also really consider those around us who are not necessarily having such a great time of it.
Well, I think it's almost impossible not to feel that these days. I mean, perhaps when you're as young as the little Santa Claus writer, it doesn't occur to you that everybody doesn't have this magic time. But even living in this beautiful so-called land of enchantment, I'm just stunned by the amount of real tragedy that's going on in our town that we can really help with, you know? In little tiny ways. I mean, the homeless situation in this freezing, freezing, damp, really piercingly cold winter is devastating. Things like blankets and shoes and mittens and scarves, which are available all over town, sometimes for extraordinarily little money. Like I noticed that at Albertsons on the Zafferano end of town, they have these incredible blankets that are only $2.50 a piece. That's one warm person, maybe.
So basically, you or I or anybody can go to Albertsons, buy three of those blankets.
Four for $10.
And
two for five.
Bring them to St. Elizabeth's or to the shelter. There's a shelter in the building where Pete's Pets was,
yes,
on Cerrillos Road.
Yes, and both of those shelters are taking in, well, the other night there were 60 people at freezing cold night at the Pete's Pets shelter. And I think the best time is end of the day, because they tend to open late. And there are wonderful people working there free, obviously, who can lay out exactly what the needs are. But I know for a fact that although they have mats and sleeping bags, that blankets and particularly large men's boots, because for some reason a lot of men walking in with size 13 or so feet are having trouble just keeping warm. My understanding is that the many wonderful church organizations in town are taking care of serious food at the end of the day. And say, I think the best thing to do is just as you're passing down the road, check St. Elizabeth's, check Pete's Pets, check the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, which has an overflow of animals now, cold or hungry.
And what sort of things can you take to the animal shelter?
They also, the animals love those blankets. The animal shelter is so well organized and does such extraordinary work in our community. I mean, really, and it's an amazing facility, that calling there, you'll get the instant answer. We need dry food, or we need more blankets, or we need toys, or whatever. It changes from day to day, but my feeling is that as we live in this town, some of us who are lucky, for just about nothing, a couple of dollars, can really make a big difference. And it's hard to look at extraordinary presents in stores with, you know, a comfortable heart when somebody's on a subsistence level of ice-cold unhappiness.
And it's one thing, I mean, there are many of us who have probably extra gloves and mittens and socks and things like that hanging around, but also to actually, when you're in the supermarket, just buy an extra blanket or buy an extra bag of dog food or cat food.
Exactly.
Those things, for those of us for whom maybe it doesn't make that much of a difference on your budget, certainly the $250 blanket is something almost anybody can afford. To add that to your list of things to do, that's a wonderful idea.
And I've noticed that at places like Wild Oats, that when you buy groceries, you can
add $5 or $10 to your bill, and they'll feed a family.
Exactly. And they're bagged consciously. It's not just about bringing in the extra can of pasta that you didn't think you'd eat. It's about really sort of second-guessing how you'd like to feel.
And you feel a little bit better when you leave the store. You know, if you,
well, it's the whole thing now that I think that whatever's going on in the world that's so scary, there is enough. We have to share. There is enough. This outrageous discrepancy between way too much and absolutely nothing is helped by just real people, I think.
And I think we live in a community that is small and contained enough, so you're pretty confident that anything you do has an effect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the time you actually know or have seen the people who are, I mean, we know all the cashiers in the grocery stores where we shop, at least by sight. So many people from these organizations have come onto this show, so you, the listeners, know them by sound. You know, the people from the Food Depot were here.
Oh, they're amazing.
Before Thanksgiving. Oh. They're fantastic.
That work is so stupefying. They are literally gathering millions of pounds of food for all over the state of New Mexico. And if anybody wants to have their heart warmed, they should go down to Siler Road and see that operation, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Kitchen Angels and Food Depot. Yeah. So we all can just pitch in a teeny amount, even if it's a dollar. It makes a difference.
And I think it's also important to remember that while there are always big donors who make donations to nonprofit organizations and so on, it's really everybody pitching in a little bit that makes all the difference.
Well, hearing, as I did the other night, Greg Mortensen, who wrote that extraordinary book, Three Cups of Tea, and now has From Stones to Schools, has inspired school children all over the country to just put pennies away. It's called Pennies for Peace, but it's buying a different consciousness and a different quality of life for hundreds of thousands of children. That's, you know, I want to see a big glass jar in every public place in Santa Fe for pennies, for school lunches, for a better playground, for extra tutoring. I mean, for all the stuff that makes society better.
Right. You know? And also just remembering that we're all in it together and that every one of us has at some time been in a position of need, and every one of us at some time it is a position of being able to give.
Yep.
And those roles, by the grace of dog or God or whatever you want to call it, can reverse in an instant.
Well, that's the part that's so devastating to clock right now, which is that overnight a family that had worked very, very, very earnestly to put kids through school and pay all their bills is just, you know, annihilated overnight.
The rug has been yanked out from under them. Yeah.
So it's not about a preconceived sort of 1950s idea of what homeless looks like. It looks way different now.
A lot of it looks like families, people living in cars, people who really do look like you and me, and who are you and me. And
but for the grace of God, for sure.
Yeah.
So I think I'm thrilled. I'm a huge fan of Collected Works and Dorothy. She does so much for this town and so much for every event. And it's such fun to be invited by Jonathan to do this reading, because it's the sweet part of Christmas, the romantic. I mean, I think it's all valid, what we were talking about before, and then to be able to listen to Dylan Thomas or in front of a crackling fire and maybe inspire somebody to say, by the way, Dorothy, I'd like 6 copies of that book because I haven't read it in 50 years, and it's magic, you know?
Yeah.
Dorothy Massey is the proprietor of Collected Works, a wonderful bookstore on the corner of Water and Galisteo Street, and we've talked about it a number of times, but the new, big, extremely comfortable space with these terrific couches where you can sit and listen to Allie and Jonathan and a number of others.
It'll be Bob Martin of the Lensic reading, and also Carol McGiffin, with whom I used to do West End Christmas for many years.
And you can sit by a fire and have a coffee or a hot cider and just listen to Christmas magic, which is
And then be
rare.
Inspired to go out and buy a blanket and take it over to...
Blanket and a book.
A blanket and a book and take it to the shelter.
Yeah. Or any place that touches your heart, you know?
There certainly is no shortage of people and places in need, and we want to thank all of our listeners who, I think we have a wonderful group of listeners to this radio station who really get it, who really are engaged in one way or another. And I think sometimes the thing that we have to overcome is people don't necessarily like to look at things that scare them or things over which they feel powerless. We don't know how to make an economy in which all people are employed. We don't even seem to know how to do health insurance reform at this point. And so that sense of powerlessness overcomes us, and so then we don't want to do anything. But just remember, you can always do a little bit.
And I think a lot of it really is just using this time of year to be reminded, to remind yourself that there are things you can do with so little effort and so much gain on the other end.
And I think that in anybody's neighborhood, a great place to find out what needs to be done is the local elementary school, because those teachers and principals really have a very firm idea of which families are less comfortable than others and where there might be some help. And whether or not we have kids in those schools, neighborhood by neighborhood, it's a manageable way to do the investigation.
So what do? Go to your local neighborhood elementary school and say, I want to talk to the principal?
Well, we did.
Really?
Yeah. And the principal in our neighborhood is wonderful and very, very, very on top of the whole situation. And neighborhood, what is the word I'm looking for? Organizations. I mean, there's so many cluster neighborhoods in Santa Fe. And I think that it's great if the neighborhood takes on their neighborhood and says, how can we help a little bit? I keep emphasizing, just out of economic reality, what you said before, which is a little bit is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Big, big deal. It's how it works.
Right. I'm also struck, I noticed this in myself, I'm willing to spend maybe $20 on something that I don't really need that much, but then just handing a $20 bill to someone else somehow seems like a really different thing. And to kind of examine what that's all about, I think, is important too, which I'm still in the process of.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah, you have to put it to yourself that you are, in fact, getting something for that $20 bill. It's
uh-huh.
a hard, not an easy case to make necessarily to yourself, but, I mean, there is a lot of truth to that
Well, and it's the 8 blankets at Albertsons.
Yeah.
Or we've outgrown these mittens and sweaters. You know, the kids are grown up, and we really, what should we do? And there are places all over town and all over New Mexico that it would be totally thrilled to be able to say this looks in perfect condition and it's just your size. And you know, that's not a big, I'm a big closet cleaner. I think it's because my house burned to the ground in Malibu 20 years ago, and that's how I came here. And so suddenly everything was gone, and it gives you a much more minimalist vibe. If I don't wear something for 2 or 3 years, it's gone. I don't want it.
Yeah.
And it feels good. Easy.
Very interesting. Ali McGraw and Jonathan Richards will be reading at the Holiday Reading at Collected Works Bookstore this Saturday, December 19th at 4 in the afternoon, and then again on Tuesday the 22nd.
At the same time.
At the same time at 4 o'clock. It's free. For more information, you can call Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe at 505-988-4226, and they are once again on the corner of Galisteo and Water Street in Santa Fe. Thank you both so much for being on
Thanks,
the Radio
Mary
Cafe.
Charlotte.
Thank you for having us, and thank you, Jonathan, for cooking this up. I think it sounds like such fun.
Well, thank you for joining in.
thank you.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's nice to be here.
Yes, you're great.
We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome the wonderful folks from the Santa Fe Art Institute, Diane Karp, who is executive director, Michelle LaFlamme-Childs, Deanne Brown, and Guadalupe Vargas. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Hi.
And let's start with tonight, Thursday, at the Santa Fe Art Institute. There is an open studios. You are the director, Michelle, of that. And often we have the residents on. They're not available today, but tell us a little bit about what's going on tonight.
Yeah, tonight will be our monthly open studio, the last one of 2009, which is unbelievably hard to comprehend that we could possibly be at this point. But at 5:30 p.m., we open the doors to the public to come in and hear what the writers have been writing, what the artists have been making. Actually, you might see what the artists have been making. And really get a sneak peek into studio process, which is a rare and fun thing.
And so that's at 5:30, and there are writers who are writing and painters painting and things like that. And,
yep,
of course, my favorite part, refreshments.
Yes, as always.
Excellent. Diane Karp, the Santa Fe Art Institute is a very interesting place. I mean, many of our listeners go there for these lectures on Monday night, and we're going to be talking to, as always, more of your artists and lecturers and so on, and you've got exhibitions there. But there's this whole unseen by the public aspect of the Santa Fe Art Institute, which is programs that are happening in the schools and in the communities.
Absolutely.
Or out of the schools.
Well, in fact, when Deanne does her reports, she calls them in-school and out-of-school programming. And since I arrived in Santa Fe, one of the things that became very obvious to us is that for all the cultural richness and all the arts that's everywhere in Santa Fe, oftentimes it's the young people, the children and the young people in Santa Fe who really don't have a lot of access to the arts. And there's arts in the elementary school, but the middle school, which is that crazy moment in time when we all get terribly worried about doing things that other people can see, and we kind of clamp down on our creativity, and the schools do that as well. They want everybody doing the same thing at the same time, in lockstep, because it makes schools easier to manage. A lot of the young people who are incredibly creative and innovative and gifted and talented seem somehow to just shut down. And it was my belief when I first came, going in and out of the schools, that some of the high attrition rate can be attributed to the fact that the kids who have the greatest creative energy are not allowed to express it. And they don't tell their own stories. They read what's given to them and respond to it. And so we decided, in fact, it was Deanne Brown who's sitting next to me. Deanne and I decided that we were going to go in and start stirring stuff up and make some trouble. And not make some trouble in a bad way, make some trouble in a good way. And see if we could empower some of these young, gifted people and enable them to share their stories and be creative and make imagery and make poetry and engage in problem solving in a way that was comfortable for them, that really had the potential to change themselves and their sense of self-esteem and change their roles in the community. And so we set to work. So we have anti-graffiti or graffiti mentorships, and I use both of those terms.
Anti-graffiti?
And graffiti, and I'll explain what that is.
You were talking about antimatter yesterday.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's kind of the same thing. Matter is antimatter. Antimatter is matter. And the idea that so many of the young people that we encountered in the youth detention centers were kids who had tried to make a statement publicly. They made it in the wrong place, in the wrong way. And for tagging, depending upon how bad the tagging was and how expensive the cleanup was, they were forced to either be incarcerated or punished severely in another way. And we looked around and we said, how could we be criminalizing creativity? And more than anything, how could we be criminalizing creativity in our young people? So we set about finding a vehicle to engage just those topics. And we hired on an incredibly gifted young man named Guadalupe Vargas, who we call Parrish. And Parrish became this guide. He is a graffiti artist. And he took these kids who wanted to tag, who wanted to have a voice, and he taught them by bringing in graffiti artists from all over the country who had different styles, different techniques, and different effects. And he brought them together and said, look, you want to tag? It's not a bad impulse. You have to learn what to do with the impulse. And so Guadalupe is going to talk about his mentorship and the projects that we have cooking. And we went into the public school with programs that really empowered voice. So they weren't traditional form and function arts. They were arts that the kids could relate to. They were arts and poetry that allowed them to be comfortable speaking
And Deanne's going to talk about that. And I think the end result is there's a lot that the Art Institute does, and we do it within our own community. And one of the most recent projects is that we've taken on not only DeVargas Middle School, but Hopewell Community Center, which is our own neighborhood. And we're beginning to work with them in a concerted effort.
So, Guadalupe Parish, how did you start working with kids in doing graffiti art? I mean, what was that whole process like?
In Albuquerque, I used to work with this guy, Mike360, doing murals. And there aren't too many outlets for graffiti artists. So we were involved with the other kids and troubled kids and doing big mural projects with them. And the way I got into Santa Fe was I came to do a hip-hop workshop at the Youth Detention Center in 1997. And I just fell in love with Santa Fe and started working with projects here through Warehouse 21. And, in 2000 myself, I got in trouble with the law for graffiti. And it was a pretty high-profile case. They're looking at giving me 12 years in prison. And, you know, this was my first offense. But, I just feel that there isn't really many outlets for kids. You know, they were trying to give me 12 years in prison for this. And, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that aren't aware of, you know. So I just try to give them an outlet so they don't get in trouble and face what I had to face and show them that there's positivity, you know. And you could use the outlet to, as in, you know, I use my graffiti as an outlet instead of doing drugs or, you know, getting involved with gangs. That was my outlet. So I try to show people that it is positive. You know, you can express yourself positive and use it as a good outlet.
One thing I've always wondered about graffiti was, in a town where there's a lot of displacement of people and neighborhoods through new people coming in to buy their little dream piece of property in the land of enchantment, whether there isn't some kind of territorial impulse going on, saying, wait a minute, you think you can just take over, we're still here.
A lot of the neighborhood, like even the gang graffiti, the gang tagging, definitely does that. What I notice more about, like, the actual graffiti is it's people expressing themselves, just trying to, you know, just let them know that they exist, you know. And that's mainly what I get from a lot of the actual graffiti, opposed to anywhere you go, the gang tagging. That's more of a territorial thing.
So the kinds of expression that you see in graffiti, there's always, to people who aren't inside it, there's always a kind of mystery, like writing that you can't read or something that you can't understand. It's almost like it's in code.
To some it's like that, and some it's just getting up, you know. I mean, it's just as simple as that, you know. Some of the kids are just, you know, they're learning about it themselves, and I've been doing it for over 20 years, and I'm still learning about it. But, I think sometimes what happens, people that don't understand it try to put too much message on it, and then that's where they get confused that, oh, this all graffiti is gang graffiti, you know, and they assume, oh, look, this arrow means that it's pointing west, you know, it just happens the wall is facing that way, but, you know, people put too much thought to it, and it's, you know, it's just someone trying to express themselves most of the time.
So you've got all these creative young people that you're working with. I would imagine that some kids are into graffiti, and maybe kids are into other kind of painting or art as well.
Yeah, we encourage, you know, basically with graffiti, what we work on at our workshop is letter structure, composition. There's definitely a lot of geometry, which a lot of people aren't aware of, you know, and it's mathematics. It's pretty universal. And there's kids that work with stencils, and they want to learn more about free spray can control instead of just doing stencils. We do encourage, like the mural we did at Hopewell Project, not only did we use spray paint, we also used rolling paint, some acrylics, did sculpture work there. And it kind of transcends. Like even myself, a lot of my paintings right now are acrylics, and before it was all just spray paint. So you kind of learn how to use what you learn, you apply it to different techniques.
Tell us about the Hopewell Project.
The Hopewell Project is a project that we all got together with the Hopewell Community Center, and
Now, the Hopewell Community Center is on Hopewell Street, right near 2nd Street here in Santa Fe.
Yeah, it's on Hopewell and Espinacitas. It's called El Centro, and it's a really wonderful place. We just barely, I just barely had the pleasure to get involved with them. They do a lot of where they teach English as a second language to people there.
GED courses.
Yeah, they do a lot of different programs there.
Yeah, they. I was over there, and they do also distribution of food.
Yes,
to
from
people
the
who,
food
who
depot.
Need it. Yeah, all sorts of
every Wednesday. Yeah. On Wednesdays we have a workshop from 4 to 6. It's a hip hop workshop where we get some of the kids in the neighborhood and we record music with some of the local artists there, and we set up a little studio. And it's fun because these kids are shy at first, and they start writing their rhymes, and they're learning about writing composition and 16 bars, you know, where we separate the music into measures. And now they're, like, really confident, and we recorded a song where we performed it at a little function we had there about a month ago.
Nice. Yeah.
One of the things that we learned very early on is that the arts, the creative arts across the board, are incredible vehicles to allow kids to engage in learning things, learning mathematics, learning language, learning how to express themselves. And whereas if you gave them a piece of paper and a pencil and you told them to write a story, they would freeze. Where in this situation, Parrish is amazing. He's like the Pied Piper, and he gets the kids to begin to think about their own stories, tell their own stories, put them to music, learn about rhymes, and suddenly they have the ability to have a voice. And not only do they hear it, they hear each other's. They learn to respect each other. I think it's the idea of hearing other people's stories and understanding that there's just an amazing amount of commonality that can be shared, especially through the arts and music.
I think it's also important to say, and I know I've said this before on this show, but it bears repeating, which is that the arts are valuable not only in the effects that they have, like you become better at mathematics and better at languages, they're valuable in themselves.
Oh, absolutely. These kids are innately creative. And if you give them a chance and you tell them what a fabulous job they're doing and how good they are, it's like they beam, because it's not something they hear very often. And I mean that for all kids. I don't just mean for the kids at Hopewell.
There's also another phenomenon which is going on, which is telling kids they're fabulous when they're not.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Well, we don't see it much, because one of the things that we've experienced, I think, across the board is that if you give children the opportunity to think about and engage in creative activity and you give them a safe, secure place to do it, they're pretty amazing.
Deanna, tell us about the work you've been doing.
I've also been working in the Hopewell community. And we do. There's another part of that is there's a women's workshop that's going on where Chrissy Orr and Soledad Santiago have been working with a group of women weekly. And Parrish and I, we take the little kids, very little, anywhere from 2 to 5 years old. And they've been doing a similar kind of storytelling, the women. And they're working on collage books and kind of telling a new story for Hopewell and their dreams and aspirations. And so that is going to result in, I think, early spring, there's going to be a community installation going up there. And we also do, Parrish and I work a lot in the schools with doing hip-hop workshops. I'm not really the hip-hop one, but we also take a lot of our resident artists into the schools to work with and engage with different groups. And that's been great this year happening. And
there's something that I think is so easy to do if you just do it, which is when you expose kids to types of people that they've never met before. I had a little neighbor who used to come over a lot, and I had a friend visiting who was an anthropologist, and he'd never met an anthropologist. He'd never even heard the word before. Once that was made, he was in. He knew that he could then, for the rest of his life, be comfortable with anthropologists and know what they did and so on. And just making that link is huge.
And that's what it's been amazing. Just recently, one of our former residents, who I believe you remember, Issa Niafaga,
yes,
from Cameroon, he's back in town, and we've connected with the Santa Fe Indian School. And it's amazing in his presentations how much they have in common and just talking with the
Indian
kids.
And African people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's also a mural project on the building, which maybe, Parrish, you could tell us about, because that's something that people can see from now on.
And a gorgeous piece of sculpture.
Yeah, we had a couple residents that came from Sao Paulo, Brazil, Janato and Everaldo, and Janato and Everaldo started in graffiti art in Brazil and do a lot more, I call it recycled art, where they there's a lot of trash on the streets in Brazil, and they'll pick it up and not only not get rid of it, but like 2-liter bottles, they'll turn them into flowers and put them back at the riverbank or wherever they found it. So now they've created this flower out of a 2-liter bottle that was once trash, and now you walk through there and it's a beautiful garden, you know, year-round garden. And we had the pleasure to go to the transfer station and load up a truck full of 2-liter bottles with these guys. And if you go down Hopa and Espinacitas, you'll see this sculpture of a beautiful woman that's made out of tires, a tree trunk, and some of these green leaves that were made out of 2-liter bottles. And you'll notice it because if you go in the wintertime, as it is now, the only tree with green leaves.
Right.
And the mural idea, Janato and I came up with it. What it was just do like a landscape with mountains, sky, and grass fields. And what he did was cut out these flowers out of wood and a butterfly, which Deanne painted. And it came out beautiful. It's on the door. But we painted the mural, and then we came back later and installed all these wooden flowers. And it's really beautiful.
I love how you went down to the transfer station and said, you know, do you have any extra 2-liter green bottles? And they said, why, yes, we do.
Well, it was just beautiful because when we called them on the phone, the guy that was in charge, he was very adamant about, oh, well, we're busy and we're not going to be able to help you, you know, so we'll point you in the right direction, but you could get all you want. But as we were wearing hard hats and getting hit by plastic bottles, a couple of the guys, you know, came and, hey, come over here. There's bottles over here. So they helped us, and we'd like to thank the transfer station for being very helpful.
Absolutely. One of the things that we find is the truth of the matter is when you do good work within your community and everyone is invited, everyone is willing to participate, and they pitch in. They get great satisfaction out of making a difference. And in fact, that mural and that piece of sculpture over at El Centro at Hopewell makes an enormous difference. It makes the building inviting and makes it visible. And one of the things that happens, and happens all too often in communities that are not well-served or wealthy, is that they lose their visibility and the people in them lose their connectivity. And what we're really hoping, because it is our community, is to build real connection between Hopewell and the communities around it and make Hopewell and all of the Hopewell community highly visible, comfortable being visible, and engaged in the way in which their community relates to the larger Santa Fe landscape.
I think it's also really important not to separate kids into categories too much. This is a group of at-risk kids, this is a group of affluent kids, and so on. Because although they certainly have different challenges at home and so on, they're basically engaged in the same activity, namely growing up and figuring out who they are and what they want to do. And they all bring the same set of talents and energies, which are very diverse in any community, to that work.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been amazing because a lot of the kids we work with in Hopewell, then when we're over at DeVargas Middle School doing workshops, the same kids are there. And just recently we had a whole group of 53 kids, seventh graders, come over. And again, it's, you know, the same ones we work with here or that Parrish works with in graffiti mentorship. And so we were talking about this just recently, that it's all so circular now, and it's not just, oh, we're going to go work with these at-risk kids in this, you know, neighborhood. But it's, you know, we work with all kids in such a variety and so many different aspects.
And one of the things that happened was when Parrish went over with one of our artists, with Ted, who also is involved in hip-hop and music, as they walked through the school, the kids that they work with at Hopewell were, in fact, empowered by the fact that they already knew the visiting artists.
Right.
That they were already in and active and engaged. And so it, in an odd sort of way, gave them a little leg up and the familiarity and the comfort of saying, oh, yeah, you know, parish is cool. Come on, I'll introduce you to the kids who live in more affluent areas. And that's the beauty of the arts. Whether you're rich or you're poor, whether you're empowered by, you know, the economic system or not, if you are willing to express yourself, if you have talent, that distinguishes you within our structure.
So they're writing poetry as well as everything else?
Yes. We do poetry workshops down at the youth detention centers in Albuquerque. And we are looking forward to getting an anthology published. And it's absolutely amazing, the powerful works that came out of there. And we also do slam poetry with Amaryllis de Jesus Molesky at DeVargas Middle School.
And that girl's a force of nature.
She is a force of nature. And it's Ammo and Jesse Workman and Cynthia Ruffin who developed the Breath program that has been running down at the YDDC in El Camino for more than 2 years now. And that's the anthology that we're going to produce. It's the work of incarcerated kids.
Tell us some of the stories of the incarcerated kids you've worked with.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because when we first came, in 97, there was a group of Hawaiian kids locked up here in Santa Fe, and I guess they tried robbing a bank or something, so it was like eight of them. And they were breakers, like really serious break dancers, and so they, you know, a lot of people have a misconception about New Mexico hip-hop, and when they come here, they're like, whoa, you guys are really on your hip-hop. And these kids are like, oh, we break dance, we do this, and we brought in myself, I MC, I rap, I DJ, I do graffiti, and breakdance. And so we surprised them. I battled the kids, and they were like, okay, you're cool. You know, like, so it was really cool. And that's, but like, wow, there's so much diversity here that, that it made me fall in love with this place. I also went a couple years with Ammo and them to the finishing workshop, and I got to perform and DJ for the kids out at the YDDC in Albuquerque, and it was a great time, and it was just cool seeing the energy that these kids had, you know. And it's like, some of the poetry was, well, most all the poetry was amazing, but just some of the kids, you could see their energy, you know, like, dang, that's like how I was when I was a kid, you know, like when I got on stage, I just became this crazy animal, you know. And some of these kids were like the same way, just killing the performance, you know. And it was amazing just seeing that even like in a place being locked up, that they could shine, which, you know, which is beautiful.
Another thing that goes on, and Deanne and Parrish can address that, is that we do public murals, and oftentimes they're outdoors. We're working with the city of Santa Fe on the DeVargas Skateboard Park, and we've already done some amazing murals, one at the DeVargas Middle School in the cafeteria. And the murals are always collaborative. We did a phenomenal one at Capitol High, taking an outdoor space that had been overgrown and looked like a trash heap. And Deanne went in. And why don't you talk about that, Deanne?
Well, we worked closely with Paula Iveland, who's an exceptional teacher out there at Capitol High. And there was a courtyard that looks like a prison yard. And it has all of these tiles about 4 by 4 feet tiles. And so we worked with a huge group of kids to come up with an idea for a mural on those tiles. We were just going to do about 20 of those tiles, but we ended up doing 100. And so part of it is a collaborative work in the center, and then each of the kids had 2 tiles to do their own vision on. And it opened with, we had over 400 people, just a big celebration. And we also put in a lot of plants and gardens, and they're building a greenhouse there. So it has life in it now.
And Mayor Koss came and painted along with the crew. So
nice.
It's amazing how it sort of opens up communications and builds bridges between parts of the community and even within parts of the community.
Does this work, in your view, Parrish, have potential to deal with some of the problems that arise from gangs in Santa Fe?
Well, I think if you give kids different outlets, like, what was that lady's name that came from the elementary school? The librarian lady.
Sarah Hart.
Yeah, she realizes that, you know, the kids at the elementary school, you know, they're getting ready to go to junior high, and usually between the stages when you get hit up with gang, you know, there isn't really that many outlets. So I think with art, giving kids, like a lot of our kids, you know, they come from different neighborhoods, but that come to our graffiti workshops, but they all become friends now. They go to different schools, and they're all friends, and they hang out. And in a way, that's kind of like a substitute. You know, a gang is kind of like, a lot of people look at it as a protection or a group of friends, you know, and usually it turns out being negative. So with our workshops, what we try to do is, you know, you have friends at different schools, so why not? You know, they become like a group, you know, kind of like not a gang, but just they all hang out with each other. They go to different schools, different backgrounds, but they still have that common bond that makes them like brothers and sisters.
And they work on projects together, and they're public projects, and they all get to sign their name and take credit for it. And that builds a kind of intimate friendship among these kids. And one of the things that was really amazing at Hopewell was the kids that are from the South Side and kids that are from the West Side work together. And now the idea is to help them to continue to respect each other's work and the project itself. So it really is a way of engaging how you manage conflict resolution, how you build a little bit more tolerance and respect for each other's work and for each other as an extension of that.
I think one of the things that points out is that adolescence is a time where you really need a sense of belonging outside of your family. And if you don't have that in a positive way, it's going to be trouble.
Well, you're adrift. And Sarah Hart, who is a librarian in an elementary school in our area, mentioned that, you know, by the time these kids are in sixth grade, they are already being recruited for gangs. And she came and we had a wonderful talk, and we don't know if we'll be able to accomplish it, but she wanted us to come in and do some murals with the kids and their parents in the library. And so we're pursuing that a little bit. And we're at the stage now where we develop our own programs and we think through what we'd like to do. But more often than not, it's the community groups and community centers and schools that are coming to us to say, can you think of something that would work for us?
One of your programs is called BREATH, which is an acronym for Building a Revolution of Expression and Action Through Heart Work.
Yes, and that's Ammo and Jesse and Cynthia's project down at the Youth Detention Center and El Camino. And it is the result of young people, all three of them, who really want to give back. They want to help other kids that are in trouble. They want to be able to show them an alternative way of moving through the world and a way of expressing themselves and having a voice that's not only to be respected but awed.
If people who are listening have kids in school or work in the schools or just want to get involved, how do they do so?
Well, they call Deanne Brown, who's the Director of Education and Outreach. They can contact Parrish, and they can call the Santa Fe Art Institute at 505-424-5050, or go on the web and send us some mail.
And it's at sfai.org, stands for Santa Fe Art Institute, and there's a wonderful set of photographs, which I think you're just getting ready to put online, which gives a very visual and beautiful representation of all the different programs that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, Diane Karp is the Executive Director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Deanne Brown, Guadalupe Vargas, and Michelle LaFlamme-Childs, thank you all so much for being here. And don't forget, tonight at 5:30, Open Studios at the Santa Fe Art Institute, artists and writers will be there. Thank you all so much for
everything you do, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz features Artists of the Month, George Shearing.